Zion, starting with Thessalonica 5:3. Vayelchu chameshes hanashim. So we have these three spies who visited. I'm sorry, these five spies. Numbers are difficult on fast days. We have these five spies. Vayavol Laisha. They come to a city, the city which we saw was a unsuspecting city called Laish. They see the nation that lived there. Yosheves lavetach mishpat zilonim shaketu vatech. They see that the people living there are from the Empire of Sidon, which is a northern kingdom we saw on the map last time. And they're living in the middle of nowhere. They're all very happy and safe. There's no problems with their neighbors. Yoresh etzer, they don't have any inheritors who are going to come claim for them. And they are very far from Sidon, which is their empire. So they're sort of an outpost in the northern Galilee area. And v'davar ein lahem im adam, they don't have any treaties, any covenants with anybody else that somebody's going to respect to come and save them. So the last thing we pointed out, and this is where we ended last week, was this is a very positive description. We've been described about a nation who seems to be doing everything they're supposed to be doing: peaceful, safe governance. Everything's all right. That's the tone of this pasuk. And now we have Dan arriving. So we're gonna have to keep that in mind as Dan attacks the city. So at the moment it's only spies. The narrative continues. This is pasuk ches vayavoa es el achem tzara, and they came to their brothers in tzara ve'eshtoal and in eshtoal. These are the two major cities of the Dan kingdom. This is in the south. Vayomer lohem achem mo'atem, and the brothers asked, so what happened? What was the outcome of your spying trip? Vayomru in pasuk tes, and they respond, kuma v'na'ale aleihem, let us ascend to them. It's a very nice land. Let's go take them. Vatem machshim, you are. They translate over here. They also say, why are you still? Meaning quiet. Why are you wasting time when we could take advantage of these people? Al teotzlu, do not become lazy. Laleches lavonaresh esaris, to go and inherit the land. Gilda, you made it. This is we have the completion. Gilda, we have that every chair, perfect. So now the spies return. Let's take advantage. Why are you waiting? They tell the entire city of Dan. Well, continuing along, what I just plans over here. I'd like to finish the narrative of this entire perek. I'd like to get to the end of the perek with a few points along the way, which will put us in the position next time to take a look at the entire story and analyze it outside. From an outside perspective. So today's goal, in the time that we have remaining, is to be able to try to get to the end of this parak, which is not too long. There's a few interesting points along the journey. So we have the spies of Dan returning, and they say they found a good place. They've got a good place to take, and they're encouraging their inhabitants to go to war. So we're now on page 4, pasuk yud. Yes. Kevoachem, when you come, these are the spies talking to the Danites. Tovoel am boteach, you'll come to the people; they'll be secure. Vaoretz rachavas yodai, and the land is very spread out. Kinesana Elokim biedchem, God has given it in your hands. Makom asher ein shom machsor kol davar ashevaretz, there's nothing lacking in this land. And we have to bear in the back of our minds when they're giving this report, they're giving a physical report of what they saw, but they're also giving a report about what they heard from Micha, who spoke to his idol. And remember, his idol, the last thing we left off was he spoke to the idol, and the idol said, Hashem will be with you. So when they say, that's the question, is was he reporting Hashem's message, or was this really true Avodah Zarah, which is the topic we're going to come back to hopefully in the next session, is where was that message even coming from? Was that a illusion? Was it really Hashem just through a mismanaged medium? But it's interesting when they report back and they say, Ki elo, nosano elo kim biyadchem, God has given it in your hands. They're referring both to what they saw, but also what they heard from Micha, this priest by the shrine, which is just interesting how the theology is affecting their report as well, which we're going to have to see as we continue and follow these people through, how this theology of what the idol had said to them is going to affect the way they look at reality. So they traveled from there, from the families of Dan. Mitzarah ve'eshtol, me'eshtol, from Tzara and Eshtol, these two large cities. Sheish me'os ish chagur klei milchama. So 600 men girded for war are setting out. Okay, we're going to see that there's not only 600 men, but at least we're being told about the soldiers who are part of this group at this point in time. So you have 600 soldiers leaving, which seems to be a substantial army, at least in these times. You know, later on by David HaMelech, his army was also 600 at least at the beginning. And in Pasuk Yudvez, Vayalu Vayachanu b'Kiryas Yarim, they encamped in the in Kiryas Yarim, b'Yehuda, in the land of Yehuda. Al Kain Karu l'Makomahu Machaneh Don, they called this place in the Kiryat Yarim, the camp of Don, Arayamazen till today, which is a substantial time later. V'hine acharei Kiryas Yarim, it's just behind Kiryas Yarim.
Well, how did the people of Yehuda feel that this immense army of 600 men came and camped on their land?
That's a good question. In fact, what we're going to have to think about is that there's silence. Altogether, there really is silence through this entire journey. From the men traveling up in the spying, in the espionage, and later on, in the actual war effort, as we're seeing it now, there's silence. Nobody says anything positively or negatively. Which is part of the hallmark of the time, is that they're not protesting, but they're not helping either. Remember, this is Israel trying to find its territory. If Israel's trying to find its territory, you'd expect people to support them as well. Much further than even... So that's the silence over here is ominous, in the sense that we don't have support, we don't have contention on either side. But that's a good point. This is alone. It's families. It's not a tribe. It's not even a full tribe. It's not the whole land. Just to get a perspective over here of the journey, is just, if you take a look on page 15 of the maps, just to see our journey northwards of what's going on right over here, you can see, this is already in the center of page 15 on map 1, we have on the left side of the map, in the the left center, are the cities Eshtoel and Tzara. That's central Dan territory, down south by the mountains. And they're moving their way northwards. Just towards the center of the picture, under the word Eretz Binyamin, is Kiryas Yarim. That's the area which they're going as they move northwards. But remember, they have a very long trip. Their trip is so far up north, it's off this map. It's all the way further up past the Kinneret to the very north. But this is the start of their journey. So that's what we're being told over here. Remember, as they move northwards, because they can't conquer the coastal plain because of the Plishtim. So as they move up, just returning now to the Psukim, we have in on page 4 in Pasuk Yud Gimel, this journey continues. Vayavru Misham Har Ephraim. They now encamp as they're going through on Har Ephraim, which is in the central section of Israel. Vayavou Ad Beis Micha, and they came to the house of Micha, which was one of the areas. If it's too cold, if anybody's too cold, we can. Yeah, it's too cold.
Not too cold. They're fine.
I think it's the people with blowing on all the cold ones. If it gets too hot, we'll switch up. Okay. I think. There we go. In Pasuk Yudalad, Vayalu Chameshes Hanashim Haolchim LeRagel Saaretz Layish. I apologize. Yes, is it? Yes. Yeah. So the five men who went to search out Layish came. They didn't go to Layish. This is their description. It's an adjective. Vayamru Elachehem, and they said to their brothers, Hayadatem Kiyesh Babatim Ele Efodet Shafim Pesel Masecha. Do you know that in this city, which looks like any regular city to you, there's actually a idol, and there is an ephod, this garment that they wear, and trafim, and these idols, and this masecha, this molten image. You should know what we should do. So they're hatching a plot right now as they pass through again in the area of Micha. Vayasru shama, and they turned aside, meaning this wasn't directly on their path, but they made a little bit of a journey off. And they came to this young lad who's the priest of the Micha priest shrine, and they ask him in peace. And in the meantime, these 600 men are just patiently waiting at the entrance of the city while they're conversing with this Na'ar Halevi. And the five men who are the spies, the original spies who originally met this young lad, they're sneaking into the house and they're taking out the idol, the molten image, this jacket, Sounds like he's having a conversation at the entrance of the city with the soldiers who've never been here before, but the people who have been here before, the spies have slipped around the back and they're in his house. Which is why the psukim repeat themselves, which is the next pasuk.
And he can't see them.
He can't see them. He's right. He's having a conversation about with everybody outside. That's exactly why we have a repetition right over here. To emphasize that this is going on concurrently. While the conversations happen innocently at the gate, at the same time, we have these people taking this idol, the ephod, v'esatrofim, v'esamasecha. V'ayomer aleim ha-kohen, what atem asim? Suddenly there's a realization. He turns around and he sees people walking out of the house, you know, carrying everything that belongs to us. And he turns around in wonder, what's going on over here? V'ayomru, and they respond. Be quiet. Keep your hand on your mouth and come with us. Why don't you be to us a father? And this is the word that Yimicha used to convince him. Be our leader, our patriarch, and our kohen, our priest. You're playing small deals here. You're only a priest in a small house. Why don't you adopt something greater? This is your day. You can become a grand priest. Why don't you join us? We'll make you the priest of a tribe. So what would you expect the answer to be?
Yes.
It depends. Meaning, it depends how loyal you are, effectively, right? Yeah. Meaning, he's loyally dedicated to this idol worship house.
Yeah, he's
and suddenly the wind changes.
He's going to start a new religion. Yeah.
So that's the answer is exactly as Sally said. Vayitav lev ha-kohen. It pleased him. Vayikach es ha-eifod v'esatrafim. And he picked up and he joined them. Now you see this conversation. If we follow this young man through his journeys, you'll notice that there's something unusual about his way of making decisions. If we watched from the beginning, you'll notice that he's wandering through the countryside. What is he in search for? Just going back a week. He was looking for work. He couldn't find Parnasa. He needed to find. Divine work. So he chances upon Micha. Micha says, you know what? I'll give you board, room, and you'll be a priest for us. Sure. It happens to be a base of Avodah Zarah. It happens to be a shrine for Avodah Zarah. But he thinks, you know what? We saw last week that he thought that even if you need to go to an Avodah Zarah place, to a place of idol worship, it's enough to be able to at least not be unemployed. He was misunderstanding a statement. He was misunderstanding the statement that you need to do unusual work or disgracing work rather than be unemployed. But he took it to the full end. Why did he make that misunderstanding? Why, when he heard the statement that a person should do something which is avoda shezora loy, something which is work which is foreign to him, he understood the words to mean avoda zora, real idol worship? The answer is he's consistently searching for money. This person is always looking for money and the next step up in money. That's what he's looking for. And therefore, when he heard a statement from his grandfather, Moshe Rabbeinu, as you saw, which said that a person should do something in the marketplace, a person should rather do avoda shehi zaraloi, unusual work for him, rather than need other people, he heard it to mean even avoda zara. Because why? Because the money was so important to him. He took that job. And how do you see that that's the case? It's because there's no loyalty. It's all about the next stage. It's all about the next part of the job. So somebody comes over, and instead of any sense of loyalty, any hesitation even, the moment that somebody comes over and says, why don't you join us? We'll give you a bigger position, then automatically he's there. That's the tragedy of this person. And what occurs, what is fascinating about his end, is actually not part of the narrative that we have, but the Gemara fills us in. And just I'll put this on page 10, just to sort of see the end of this person. Of where he ended up, this Yonasan, the grandson of Moshe, this our priest. On page 10, in the central box, it's called Need for Money. We actually saw the first part of this conversation last week, but the continuation of the Gemara is I'm really starting from about nine, sorry, I apologize, about six lines up from the bottom. It's in the middle of the sentence that says Kevan by the period. The Gemara in the middle box. 6-7 lines up. Kevon Shera'a David. So this is apparently this priest lived a long time because he lived during the times of David as well. Kevon Shera'a David. Shemamin Mamon Chaviv Olav Beyaser. David HaMelech saw that this person was extremely attached to money, which seems to be the way he's operating throughout the story. Minehu, he appointed him ala oitzreis, on his treasure houses. He became the minister of finance. Sheneemar, it says in Divrei Yomim, v'shevuel ben Gershom ben Menashe nagid al ha'otzeras. In Divrei Yomim, it tells us that there's a person called Shevuel, the son of Gershon, the son of Menashe, which is the name of our man, except for his name was Yonasan, ben Gershom ben Menashe, was the appointee over all of David's storehouses. V'chi Shevuel Shmoy, was his name Shevuel? We know his name was Yonasan, as we saw. V'halo Yonasan Shmoy, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Sheshav Lokel Bekoli Boy. At the end of the day, he actually repented with his whole heart. But it's interesting. David took and channeled this interest in money to something, to a positive end. That's just the fascinating end to this, the story of this person who's always looking. He starts the story looking for money, finds money, gets greater money. David finally brings him in. How does David bring him in? He says, you know what, I see you're good with money. I'll give you a position in money, but do it for a constructive purpose. Just a fascinating.
He did too, before he became the treasurer or after?
That's a good question. Was that the process? No, I wonder if it was might have been the process which David maybe elicited. It's a good question. It's a good question.
This man must have been 200 years old. You know, we read in these chapters, peace was there for 40 years,
right.
He ruled for 20 years. You add this all up,
but you don't
but have
to
add it
up.
This is not
in
current.
Yes.
At the very end of Shulchan.
Right, what we're going to discuss next week is exactly the placement of this particular story. We're going to discuss when this actually occurred. But let's try to push it as far as we can to the end of Shoftim.
Okay.
The end of Shoftim is really when Shmuel Hanavi is born. Shmuel Hanavi presides for 20 years, even though when he becomes an adult. And during that time, he appoints David. So there is the possibility, he certainly has to live a long time, but there is the possibility of this being catching the tail end of this man's life. But certainly there is an extraordinary long life over here. But I think we could get it within less than 200 years, I'd say somewhere in the range of 100, which is certainly unusual. But there is something important to realize, and this is the Ramban points out, is that not all miracles Tanakh records. Tanakh only records miracles which are very important. He does a lot of number games as well. He points out that there's four generations between this person and this person. There was actually 500 years, so you have to divide them up. Each one's going to get at least 100 and such and 100 and such, unless you make one much older than the other one. The Ramban points out there are many miracles which occur in Tanakh in terms of age, but Tanakh doesn't necessarily point them out unless there's actually a relevance. Meaning Avraham Avinu, we need to know, that was an incredible miracle. He was childless for 99 years, and then that's it. So Tanakh highlights that. But there are a number of other people. Yocheved gave birth at a very old age to Moshe, at 130. Right? So there are other ones which are less highlighted because of that. But you're right, pointing out that there is a lot of discrepancy in time over here. Anyway, that was just really a side point, just in following this character as he goes on, because here you see it the most. Here you have a person who seems to be the loyal Kohen, the loyal priest, and suddenly just traipses off with the visiting tribe. There was not even a hesitation or a moment's decision. That's just something to pick up on when thinking about this person.
I would also wonder about the people of Shebedan and the other people as well. Why were they so desperate for anybody? They would choose somebody who they don't know at all. Is he the only lady around? Is he the only person?
It's a great question.
We start with Micha, who says, well, you know, come on with me and I'll pay you and I'll take you in and you'll be our coin. Okay, so maybe he was a little bit manipulative and he was off-center, Micha. But why are these people coming with there such a force? Why do they need this Yonatan person who is really... he's there for the highest bidder.
Right, that it is a good question, and part of something we need
them success.
Yes.
Also guaranteed them success.
So part of what we need to remember is also the human psyche over here, is that if somebody tells you a good tiding, and it's going to work out for you, and they said you can do this, you feel a sense of camaraderie with them. Meaning this person over here had given them a tiding which they see is about to take fruit, and they feel that this is obviously something incredible. Here's the one who works. That there's something to that as well. But also there's also a commentary on the time again. There's a commentary on the time, again, that people are willing to even pick up a shrine in the middle of nowhere. That's also a commentary, which is a bit of the sadness of it. But I think both elements need to be considered, as Esther said as well, and as Timon's nodding to as well. Is the sadness, but at the same time, they're also feeling a little bribed by the situation.
This is a whole
Shaven.
It's most of it. A large section of it, right?
Not 500 people.
Right, but that's the sadness of the situation, is that we have a large group of people adopting this. And I want to bring out your point, Esther, the tragedy of this in just a few psukim, to see how tragic this situation in fact is.
Something quite intangible.
What they were lacking is the ability to realize that Shiloh is right next door. That's what they're lacking. There's a kohen in Shiloh, there's kohanim, there's korbanos going on concurrently in Har Ephraim, just over in Shiloh. That's what they're lacking. Remember this: the story is going on in the same mountain range as the Bishkan. Okay, that's the sadness. Yes.
Maybe we can look at it in another way. Maybe they thought they were going to save the guy. You know, they came, they knew who he was, you know, they knew his yichus, and they said, you know, what is he doing here? Maybe we should take him with us. If we take him with us, maybe, you know, then he'll turn and he'll be a Kohen the way he's supposed to be.
Point well taken. So there might have been altruism over here. The problem is that in the end of the day, it doesn't come out altruistically. So what you're suggesting over here is that maybe there was a positive. Maybe there was something. Maybe they're trying to take him away. Although I'm wondering, the way they talked to him, just to see how they discussed it. I just want to see. Not clear. They just say, you should be a kohen to us. Doesn't really discuss the Avodah Zorah at this point in time. So not clear. You could put them into the box from the beginning and say that they were just interested in negative. Or you could say maybe there was a positive glimmer, which later was extinguished because they didn't follow through. But you're right; it's hard to know at this point in time. But we know we are going to know at the end that it's not going to be positive, unfortunately. Anyways, you're right. There's a lot of possibilities that exist within these psukim because we're not told too much about this situation. Though we're now led into the actual battle itself. In Chav Aleph, Vayifnu Vayelchu Vayasimu Satafes Amikneves Akavuda Lifnehem. This is on page 6, Pasuk Chav Aleph. They place all their children and their flocks and all their wealth that they're carrying in front of them, which is something we weren't told beforehand. Before we only knew about 600 soldiers. Now we realize that they've sold their houses, right? They know that they're going to conquer this land. They're very confident in this conquest, and so much so that they even bring their families. They're going to say, just wait on the side while we kill the city, and then we'll set up camp right here. So they're very confident about their battle, which is something is being added right now. Chof Beis, Hem Herchiku Mi Beis Micha, they're walking away from the house of Micha, V'anashim Asher B'batim Mi Beis Micha, Nizaku V'edbiku Es B'nei Adam, and the people around them start crying out and start chasing them, because remember, they're taking their idol worship. V'yikru'u B'el B'nei Adam, V'yasebu P'nei, V'yomru L'micha, Malacha Ki Nizakta. They turn around and say, is there a problem? Is there some reason why you're crying out? Vayomer eselohai asher osisi lekachtem v'esakohen. You took my priest, you took my idol worship, and you took my priest. Vatelchu, and you're going. Umali od, what else do I have? Umazet tomru alai malach. And how then they say, how yet will you say to me, what's wrong with you? You know what's wrong. You took it. In my mind, I always think about the scene of Lavan chasing Yaakov in a certain sense over here. The running after, you know, you've taken my gods, right? I'm just an interesting parallel.
The word
Right, as well. We have a similar kind of scene being set up here, but it ends a little differently. Don't speak too loudly. Lest somebody who's bitter of spirit maybe attack you. Meaning, don't raise your voice too loudly. And they will gather in your soul, they'll kill you. V'nefesh b'esecho on your house. Meaning, we are much stronger than you. We are much stronger than you, so keep quiet. V'yelchu b'nei don adarkom, this is the anarchy, and they carried on walking. V'yar micha ki chazakim hemimenu. Micha saw they're much stronger than him. V'yifen v'yosho v'bosho, and he turns despondently back to his house because there's nothing he can do. This is the age of anarchy. Again, the refrain comes back to us. By Mimahim, in those days, Ein Melech be Israel. There was no king among Israel. Exactly. Ish kol ha'yashar ben avyaseh. The reign of power. This is the beginning, because as we enter into Pelegesh Begib, we're going to see it much more strongly expressed. The idea of anarchy, which is being expressed over here. This does hop back. I'm going to skip this. At the end, this hops back to a grudge that is between Dan and Yosef in general, which maybe we'll cover at the end. But I'd like to just get to the end of this section. They took with that which Micha made, his priest which he had. They come to the city Laish, which again is quiet, the emphasis on peaceful, secure, by and they destroyed it by the sword. They burnt the entire city in fire. Now, if you were the general of a battle, and you're in the business of requisition, and you're trying to take over cities, is it a smart or not smart move to destroy the city that you're about to settle in? Not a smart move, right? You should rather kill the people, and then resettlement, right? Their children and wives are waiting outside, right? We know this already from the narrative. So why are they destroying us in fire? Very unusual kind of way of doing this. There is an echo of that. There is an echo of such destructiveness. But I would like to follow the thoughts of the Radak, Rav David Kimchi, on page 10. Radak comments exactly on this point, that there's something very unusual going on in this battle, which we don't see in a usual requisitioning. The bottom page 10 in the box, this is the Radak on Pasuk Chof Zayin, Sarfu Ba'esh, they burnt in fire. So I apologize, it's only the Hebrew, but we'll just work through as we go. Yesh Litmoa, the Radak questions. This is very unusual. Lama Sarfu Asam, why would they burn the city? V'hem Rotzim Liyashva. They want to settle the city. V'hine, kol ha'arim ha'omdos al-tilam, lo'y sarfam Yoshua. Yoshua never burnt any cities on their hills. Rak Chatzor Levada, only one city called Chatzor, in the early book of Yeshua. V'hoysa ze'lefi she'hoysa rosh ha'malchus. And that was because that city was the capital city of that area. V'la'havdil ha'nisharim, and he wanted to separate from the rest of them. V'hine, elu lama sarfu ha'ir. But why over here? Laish is not the capital. They're not conquering Sidon. They're not trying to attack the empire of Sidon. They want one city. So why do they burn it? V'yitachem, by the underline, it is possible, ki kishenichnasu, when the b'nei dan b'ir, when they enter the city very suddenly, pitom, nichnasu, they enter very suddenly, ki heim loy hayu margishim, v'loy hayu nishmari mehem. The inhabitants of the city were not expecting them. They didn't even feel, they didn't expect this attack to even come. V'shalchu esh ba'ir, they set the city to light. La'havil ha'am, v'lo yiyye p'nai la'adam la'ashiv milchama, bein ha'esh ha'milchama sh'asu lohem b'neda. What they did was they set fire to create pandemonium. Meaning they wanted this to be a quick and clean battle. They didn't want any reprisal. And the best way to create havoc is to set fire, because when there's fire, you don't even know who's the enemy and who's your ally. And within the fire, within a very short span of time, Dan was able to wipe it out. Says the Radak, as a military move, they took the quickest path. They might have been able to fight it out and save the houses. They decided we don't want to fight anything, create havoc, destroy them as they're struggling. That's the way that Radak understands. It's a very, very destructive battle tactic. However, there's a kicker. There's a side point which the Radak adds at the end, and this is the irony which we're going to have to think about. This is the last line of the Radak. Oy, it is possible. Efshar, it is possible ki haisa melea gilulim. The city was full of idol worship. Lefichach sarfua, and therefore they burnt the city. We can't live in a city which has idol worship. And that is the irony.
Sure, they're bringing their own idol.
Because they bring their own idol, right? That's the irony of the whole thing. The Radak's pointing out that what's going on over here, we can't live in a city of idol worship, so we'll destroy it. But you know what? We'll import our own. That's the irony. But it begs the question how they could do it. Which is why, the next session we have, we're going to discuss what was this idol worship. Is it as bad as we're seeing it? Is it how can they possibly make such a statement? It's so blatantly hypocritical. to do something of such a standard.
It's just his conjecture.
Okay, but the Radak's conjecture is his way, is his worldview of the story. So at least within the worldview of the Radak, we can ask that.
Conjecture, which is totally different.
Yes, right. One's militarily and one's theological.
Why are they killing the people in the first place?
They want to this is part of their conquest of the land because they want to resettle and they need more place.
Yeah. Well, Jewish. They weren't Jewish and Dan needed a place to stay.
Are they from the Seven Nations?
Great, so they're not part of the Seven Nations. They right, so it's questionable whether the whole conquest is questionable in and of itself. Because this is not one of the Seven Nations. In fact, there were Seven Nations around them. The other nations, as we know, throughout the Perushoftim, there were lots of Kanani and other people around, and there were Plishti in the valley who had taken over the land. They could have, but we saw that what was Dan searching for?
A quiet place.
Dan was searching for a vulnerable place, which is part of the sadness of the whole thing. They're looking for a place of vulnerable, quiet people who they can take advantage of, which is the sadness of this, because the tone describing Laish is positive. We have this lovely, quiet, secure place, and now we have Dan burning them all in war. There's a bit of a.
Well,
the story of Pesel Micha, it's not clear. At least I've not come across a definitive view in one way or the other. But these two stories are tragic stories. Pesel Micha and Pelegesh Begeva are two tragic stories which frame the whole of Sefer Shoftim. This is, we'll call it, the depth of the valley of Shoftim, is Pesel Micha and Pelegesh Begeva. Pesel Micha is usually focused on as the depth because of the idol worship which continues. But there's another aspect of it, is actually the conquest itself, which is also the tragedy. And in fact, that's why the story closes with the continuing tragedy, which is, just to go get to the last two psukim over here.
Who exactly were the people in this?
They were Sidonites, or Sidon. They're traders. The Sidonites were usually traders on the coast up in the Lebanon area, as we have it today. Mm-hmm. Peaceful people. We don't know too much about them, except later on in Yecheskel we meet them again. But on also a bit of an ambiguous grounds.
From a yes. time frame, this is obviously if you're having the Mishkan in Shiloh, so this is before the
Good question. So you're just ahead in these psukim over here, which is that which is describing that. So the timing is actually questionable because this is a non-dated story. The story is put tacked to the end of Shoftim without any date to it. So we're going to start off next week doing the first part is to explore when it really occurred and how that affects the way we view the stories in between or after. And number two is to explore what the idol worship is. That's the next stage. But you're right, because it's very hard to sort of view this as the parallel. But the psukim, as we're about to finish over here, is describing exactly that. That the Shiloh is existing right then. So this is on page 7, just to close with us today. V'ein matzil ki rechoka hini mitzidon. Remember, there's no one to save them because they're far from their mother country, up on the northern coast. V'davar en lohem im adam. Again, they had no contracts with anybody. V'hi be'emek asher lebeis rechov. They're in this valley of Beis Rechov, Vayivnu es ha'ir vayeshuba. And Dan rebuilds the city and sells it, right? They rebuild it because they burnt it. Vayikru shema ir Dan, b'shem Dan avien. And they heroically call the city Dan because of their forefather, Dan. Asher Yulad Yisrael was born to Israel. V'ulam Laish shema ir lorishena. But it was called Laish beforehand. And we saw that in Sefer Yoshua, this narrative was already told to us as Leshem. So the city was originally called either Leshem or Laish. But irrespective, they change its name to Dan in the conquest. It was a sort of gesture of heroism. Vayakimu lohem b'nei Dan es haposel, and b'nei Dan established the idol, the Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe, who uvanov hayukwanim l'shevet hadani. And as we saw, Yonasan, this is the first time we see his name actually in the narrative, and the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe, which we know to really be Moshe, because that nun is hanging there in the actual text, were priests for many generations for this, ad yom galos haaretz, until the day of exile. Oh, that sounds late. Vayasimu lohem es pesel micha asher asa, and they took this pesel micha, this idol, which is named based on micha, kol yamei heyos based on him b'shila. All the days that the house of Hashem, this is a divine name, was in Shiloh. Okay, so you'll notice, of course, and we have to really end this because of the timing, but we have to notice over here that there's two parts. On the one hand, it sounds until the exile, and until also the end of Shiloh, which are two different points, which is going to lead us to try to understand how long did it last. Well, however long it did last, and we're going to see a number of the Mepharshim starting off next time, however long it did last, it was a long time. However long it lasted, we're not talking about a couple of years, we're not talking about 10 years, we're talking about hundreds of years. Okay? We're talking about a very long time. Okay, and this is going to be a stain on the mark of Israel throughout those centuries. What I'd like to do is as we work out the timing, which is the next session, is also to see how long when it starts and how long it goes and how that sort of sheds light on those contemporary events which you're going to read throughout the rest of Nach. Because this is a story which isn't just in Shoftim. It goes on through Shmuel and perhaps even further, which is the tragedy of it. And with that, yes, Shem.
I'm sorry, because I haven't been here before, but is this the first time that they took the idols with them?
It seems yes. It seems that it started off, Micha made it. He had his shrine, it was his personal family shrine. And this is the first specific incident. We know that we've been told of the Jews serving Avodah Zorah in other times, and we're not told the specifics. There definitely is Avodah Zorah, but to have a shrine which is always there the whole time, that we haven't seen up to now. And the fact that it stays, nobody does anything, even the good leaders, that's going to be the issue we have to deal with. We're going to have to do it. And, yes, sorry.
Maybe I'm missing something, but if the text here said that he and his sons were priests to the Sheva Dun.
Yes, how does that work with the Gemara?
From the captivity, so how come the Gemara that we saw
yes.
that he did Tshuva?
Great, yeah. Great question. I wondered about that myself. All I can imagine is that when it talks about Shavuel, it means to say superimposed on the fact that he was a Kohen and his children were, at a certain point he broke away, but it's hard to know. It's hard to know. The problem that they're dealing with a similar tradition, which is the Pasuk in Devarim Yomim, which talks about Shavuel ben Gershon ben Menashe, which was the head of the treasure house, and the Gemara links those two people, being as we don't have anybody else in a close canon fashion, to being the same person. Possibly. It depends on the tradition. The Gemara has a tradition that it was the same person, so that leads it to that direction. Anyways, so that's the highlights for next week. There's a lot of important issues, as you can see, we need to really address to shed light on this.